Turn my music high, 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 yeah. Sure I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, agents of change, welcome to another episode of Back in the Black. I'm your host, Frank Moser II, with episode 6, Your Health, Your Wealth. Let's get into it. Thank you again for joining me. Listen, it's been a really, really crazy week. I know you haven't heard from me. I've been really busy. And I know there's been a lot going on, a lot of distractions, as I would call them. The greatest reality show on TV has been playing, and I'm sure you've all been tuned in, as much of the world has been. Now, I know you bear witness to the insurrection that took place on January the 6th. This failed coup that led to the now two-time impeached president who incited this riot, this protest, this rebellion to create this historic date on January the 6th. And I'm sure you've heard by now the right's counter-argument or rhetoric or what someone may call propaganda. This was repeated on the floor of the House and right-wing talking heads just falsely comparing the marches over the summer, these protests, to criminal injustice by the police, these killings of unarmed black men in the streets, unarmed black women in their homes, children on playgrounds. Let's not forget, they were shamelessly compared to sedition, insurrection, treason. What a mockery. Let me say this, agents of change. With this band of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, hoodless Klansmen, armed militias, armed extremists, these murderers, lives were lost when they committed these acts of domestic terrorism. To do what? Overthrow a government? Overturn a legally certified election? Did they really think that they were going to stop what the people have duly elected and been certified by Congress? Every state. It's all in the history books. And this is how history is now going to be written. What side of history are you on, brothers and sisters? Because this day, this week, this month will go down in the annals of history forever as the most senseless, unwarranted, unhinged act of American citizens in over 100 years. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that it's easy to fall prey to this game of smoke and mirrors, right? These individuals, these so-called constitutionalists who believe that their white privilege trumps any law of the land, pun intended. The hypocrisy is so unbelievable. I don't think Hollywood writers could write this for the best scripted sitcom. And yet, the opposition, without fails, blames once again protesters in the street, black and brown, as the scapegoat. The race card. They always claim that we play, now they play. Crying foul, claim this is some type of double standard. Double standard? Double standard? This is how they counterpunch. Even when they're caught on camera with their hands soaked in blood, they find some way to justify their actions. You know, they claim this is no worse than the acts of fed up black and brown communities who said no more, who said enough is enough. They would dare compare this to their sick rebellion, their historic insurrection, followed by this historic second impeachment of the first white national president? This is reality TV at its finest. Only the reality of this show is that when you give the arsonist a gas can and a flame torch in a powder keg factory, we all get burned. Now, I've heard some people saying that if this was people of color, if this was Obama who incited a rebellion, a coup, an act of secession, they would be preparing for a public lynching, a public media lynching, a denigration of his presidency, a denigration of his name. And he would be condemned on both the right and the left. But in this world, in this era of Trumpism, truth are lies, facts are fiction. We got to see the game for what it is. The only double standard that we know for certain that exists is the one that we've been slapped in the face with for 400 years. This is their version of liberty. This is their definition of freedom. Well, I ask. I've asked before and I'll ask again. How free is free? How free is free for those who have the same skin color as me? I know many of you are tempted to try to do what these terrorists did, tried to do, to storm the Capitol and overthrow the government. I mean, just to prove the point that if it was us, it would be different, right? The outcome, the actions that would be taken would be different. If it was us, we would have been met with brute force without question, with riot gear and tear gas. We have plenty of examples in the past to show us that. We wouldn't have been asked to leave as if we had attended a parade. Just any time you feel like getting back into your vehicles after you've committed this insurrection, this rebellion, feel free to go home. If you committed any crimes, well, we'll check back with you later. When does that happen to black and brown? How free is free in a country like this? Lord, brothers and sisters, we don't have to go down to the Capitol and drop 10, 20, 30,000 black and brown, 100 or a million black and brown on the steps of the Capitol just to prove the point that there is inequality in this country, that there is injustice in this country, that the hypocrisy is so thick that you could cut it with a machete. The systemic racism that infects this country like a virus, another pandemic that has infected 75 million American voters, a sickness that with only truth and love, we can find a cure. Yesterday, we celebrated Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. I know his spirit must be wondering, what happened to his dream? His dream hasn't died. His dream, his life, his legacy. There are still millions of Americans who still believe that we will make it to the promised land, that we will walk hand in hand, brothers and sisters, black and white, Jews and Gentiles. We are but one. Let's not forget that. As divided and politically charged as this time is, we are but one global community. We may speak in different voices. We may see the world in different perspectives through different lenses, but we are all connected. All of our decisions, all of our actions, all of our acts of love, our acts of kindness, our acts of hate, our acts of fear. Brothers and sisters, Agents of Change, I need you to be brave. I need you to be strong. I need you to be courageous. Because during this time, we have no other choice but to be. Failure is not an option. The movement must continue. We cannot be sidetracked or distracted by the greatest reality TV show, by the greatest show or reality TV. We have got to stay focused on what's really important, our health and our wealth. Because if we don't look out for those two things for ourselves, as you can see, no one else will. I've told you before, your votes matter most to them. Elections have consequences. Turnout has consequences. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were elected because of black and brown votes. Donald Trump was elected because black and brown votes didn't turn out. We have to understand our power. And in this time, in this moment, during this pandemic, it's even more important to hold these elected officials accountable. Because while white folks are attending super spreaders, not wearing masks, not socially distanced, not caring, black and brown are still the most receptive to the COVID virus. Still the most likely to contract it, still the most likely to not recover, still the most likely to die. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. You can't get back in the black if you're not healthy. We're all about educating ourselves, informing ourselves, uplifting ourselves. Getting back in the black also means taking care of you, your health. Your wealth are tied together. You have to be physically, emotionally, spiritually healthy to be the best version of you. But when it comes to cash rules, when it comes to income, when it comes to putting money in your pocket, you got to be smart and healthy, especially during this time. Mask up. As I told you before, I was going to invite one of my very favorite guests and friends onto the show, Dr. Latifah Silski. She's a medical doctor out in Ohio who has a great personality, great bedside manner, and a great understanding of the risks that we face. I often lean on her for counsel, for a second opinion, to find some clarity when all of the noise is floating around on the internet and all of the disinformation campaigns are being launched and the misinformation is being circulated. As I lean on folks for financial literacy, for politics, I also lean on folks for health. So today, I've invited a very special guest to join us to talk about the pandemic, to talk about the vaccine, to talk about the concerns, the valid concerns that we have as a community with everything that we've faced in the past. We have to be informed about what it is that's being injected into our bodies, what it is that is the risk of not taking the vaccine, what is the inevitable outcome of catching the COVID virus. So, to talk about how we get back in the black when it comes to health during a pandemic, without further ado, Dr. Latifah Silski.
So I am Dr. Latifah Silski. I am a transplant surgeon for liver, kidneys, and pancreas. So in my real job, I take organs and place them into people who need them and have them have the opportunity to restart their life with a new organ and a new start, but mostly below the diaphragm. I am very famous in my very small family. You know, super special. My specialty is immunology as it relates to transplant. And mostly, obviously, the joke that's the most common for surgeon is I'm a cutter. But really, I like to call myself a human seamstress because I sew beautiful veins to beautiful veins and beautiful arteries to beautiful arteries.
You are an artist, is what you're telling me, that you are not just a surgeon, but you are quite skilled with your artistic talents as well.
I have the best needle point around.
I am already afraid to get on your table.
So first off, I want to start by saying I'm very excited that you invited me onto the show. The last several months have been super depressing and stressful in the hospital. And the first sign of hope that we all got was when we started to get our vaccine shots. Believe it or not, in the hospital, it was like getting a ticket for a concert. You'd get an email that was sent out and you're like, okay, you have like 2 seconds to sign up before all the slots were booked. So I was one of the later groups because the slots kept filling up, but very excited. Got my first shot. Second shot is due. I'm due to get on the 20th. So soon I will be shotted up, which is the only time that's exciting. I don't think I've ever been excited about getting a shot before, but that's where we're at. Optimism is running in the hospital. So here we are.
For a change, and, you know, without saying, it's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, but to have you on the show is a real treat. And I tell my guests a lot of times that, you know, if you're not healthy, then you're not wealthy. You're not able to take the necessary strides that you need to be healthy. You're not going to be able to take the necessary steps that you need to advance yourself from a wealth standpoint. If your body is not functioning properly, you're not getting enough sleep, you're constantly going back to the hospital, all these things are taking away from your ability to build wealth, to even build a stable financial footing for yourself. So those trips to the doctor, while they may be fun for some, especially if you work in the hospital, you may enjoy that experience. But for us who are really just trying to get our get back in the black, as we say here, Latifa, we really need to understand how important it is to be healthy. And I'm glad you started the show off talking about your experience with the vaccine, because I know that there's a lot of questions. There are a lot of concerns that people have about taking the vaccines, about the misinformation that's being circulated around on the internet, formally circulated by our president and his administration. So, you know, there's a reason that there's a lot of confusion. You know, you and I talked about coming on the show about a month ago. And when we spoke, you told me that you had come in contact with someone where you may have tested positive, so that you had to go through that process of waiting to see the results. And I think that a lot of people don't understand how easy it is for anyone to contract the virus, especially frontline workers, especially doctors.
Yeah, it's been it's definitely been interesting, because I don't think any medical condition I have ever treated or seen in the hospital has gotten this much publicity. And it's the really weird part to me is, how do patients feel about it? Because the big things that they talk about in the media is like, well, you know, almost everybody survives. The only people who go are the people that are older or have comorbidities. Well, those comorbidities are the comorbidities that all of us have. Diabetes, high blood pressure, very, very common. And it's ubiquitous in the population. Certain populations have it higher, and that's a very long and interesting conversation about why that exists and how that comes to be and gets perpetuated during the generations. But the survivors that are surviving, not everybody's doing fantastic. The idea is like, oh, so everybody survives. What's the big deal? Well, you know, not being able to do the things you can do, or have severe fatigue where you can't take care of your children or go to work on a daily basis, or have so much fatigue that you can't actually function from a day-to-day basis. It's not a joke. It's not something small. You know, when you have a patient who has breast cancer, there are not people in the media saying, well, it does not exist. It's a hoax. How do you deal with that as a patient? It's really mind-boggling, and I can't wait for the understanding to happen as far as like what happens with the patients that go through it and survive and come out on the other side. And you know what it does to somebody's psyche when there's a whole lot of people that say it does not exist, which I don't think I've ever seen. This is like a unique time in my life. No other thing has been like this, where there's so much pressure to, you know, for people to say it doesn't exist. And even sometimes when people have contracted it, they're like, it does not exist. I don't have it. Well, something's not making you breathe. So we're calling this something COVID. Well, you'll get called whatever you want, but unfortunately, you're going to have to, you know, get better, whatever you want to call it. Good sir. Anyway, it's a very interesting time.
Right. I tell people COVID, you may not believe in COVID, but COVID believes in you. Right. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it is amazing to me that we're really in a era of time where words matter, but lies carry mm-hmm. more weight than facts. And we're seeing it having this huge impact on us socially, but now also from a health standpoint as well, a healthcare standpoint, because our healthcare system is being overrun by individuals who believe that it's a hoax. Like you said, they're so far in denial, even when they're diagnosed, they're saying, no, it's got to be something else. Like, they've gotten a degree now and you know, a medical degree now. And they're qualified to tell you, the doctor, that it's something else. No, you're wrong. I mean, no, this is my third opinion. I've gotten a second and this is my third. But I need one more because I just don't believe you. And, you know, it's almost it's frightening because the ramifications are so grave. And, you know, we try to make light of it. But those individuals who have contracted and have lost family members, or those have contracted and lost their lives, those who have lost family members, those who have survived but are still suffering from some type of ongoing illness or some type of trauma that's taking place to their organs that are now decreasing from their quality of life. This is not a game. And so I think that people really should learn as much as they can. So that's why I wanted to have you on the show, to kind of be a sort of a myth buster in a way. You know, there are a lot of misinformation that's out there, as I've been saying before, not about just about the COVID virus, but also about the vaccine and whether or not people should take it and how soon it'll be administered. You know, I was reading a report the other day and it said that, you know, there's only about 9 million or so that's been administered. And I know that they anticipated there would be more like 20 million, or estimated to be like 20 million by the end of 2020. So the rollout is look like it's very slow. And you talked about you're up for a second shot. So this is one of those vaccines where you need two doses. And many of us haven't gotten the first. Many of us haven't gotten tested yet. And somebody just recently told me that you could go to any CVS pharmacy and get a free test. And, you know, so some of that information I don't think is even as well known. But I did want you to speak to some of the, I guess, you know, the ramifications of contracting COVID-19 and not wearing your mask, not socially distancing, how that can be part of a super spreader event, if you will, or it's just even a small family gathering can transmit. We talk about the cloth mask, we talk about the 3-ply mask, but what is it that that we're not doing right? What's going on that's overrunning the system, in your opinion?
First of all, I do want to clarify, I am a transplant surgeon. I am not, so there are plenty of people who work day in and day out in the ICU, primarily taking care of ICU intubated patients from COVID. Their expertise lies in surgical critical care or medical critical care, pulmonary critical care, etc. So the brunt, even the worst of the COVID, I don't get to see. I get to see a very small segment, and even that has an impact on the life of a surgeon or a medical doctor. But the ramifications are different for different people. I think that's why it gets confusing. You know, some people get it, and it's, you know, they're just like, oh, I had a little cold, a little sinus trouble, nothing, no big deal. But of course, the people that we see that we end up having to take care of are the people who are really, really being sick. And the people, it's not just the fact that people are, you know, having to come to the hospital because they weren't careful. And then we have to be very careful about having, extending love and understanding to everybody who gets COVID, regardless if they're a mask wearer or not mask wearer. Because if there's disinformation and misinformation in the hospital, I can't imagine how you would comprehend all the ridiculous amount of information that's out there and see what is good and what is useful. I think it's challenging when it becomes a political issue, because then people who would normally be super careful become not careful on principle. And that's what's uniquely different about this particular situation compared to other situations that have happened in the past. And the impact on the hospital is amazing. I mean, you know, we overlook it, but even elective surgeries, and you needed your gallbladder out, we're like, oh, well, we can't do your gallbladder because we can't have anybody with any risk of having to stay in the hospital get any surgery. You can't do all these things. The other things that even if the patients who didn't have COVID, the surgeries had to stop because we just didn't have room in the hospitals. I think the biggest problem with our system and how the information got transmitted was that the reason for the lockdowns, the shutdowns, the slowing down was predominantly all centered around what the hospital capacities were in that region. So that's basically what was driving it. That part of the message got really lost, and then it becomes more of a political thing. Like, hey, what about finance? What about this? Well, you can't have finance if half the people are in the hospital. You can't have, if you have all those workers that are, you know, giving out lunches and dinners, or all those people are in the hospital, they cannot, the businesses cannot function. And I think it was challenging for me, because in the beginning, I was one of those people who was like, well, we can, you know, I don't know, why do we have to shut it down? We can just all wear masks. We can be careful. The businesses don't have to shut down. Businesses can stay open. Health stays intact. We're going to be good. What I didn't anticipate is the amount of people that would then not do those things. And as a result, we ended up in the situation that we ended up in. Because there are plenty of places that decided to just do all the precautions and were still able to keep the businesses and the world running. I thought we were reasonable enough to make that happen. But unfortunately, when we don't have great leadership, these things kind of happen. And now there's so much disinformation out there that it's almost impossible to convince somebody that normally would be a cautious person to stay cautious. It's really incredible.
No, I think you hit it right there on the head, though, when you pulled on those threads, right? Politics and finance, and how strong of a driver those are as far as making decisions, right? Because business owners were afraid, you know, if we talk about the fear factor, right? We're afraid of losing their businesses, and rightfully so. If you don't have people that are patroning your stores because of a lockdown, how are you going to generate revenue? How are you going to put food on your table? Workers were afraid that if they didn't go to work, that they would lose their jobs. And then we, like you said, the poor leadership from our politicians, because of the people that we elected, gave us this disinformation campaign that allowed us to, or at least allow some of us to believe that this wasn't real, that this shouldn't be something that would be taken serious. And people have bought in so far as to where they have started to infect each other on every level of government, of society, of class. It just doesn't matter. It's just that there's no, like you said, there's no caution being taken anymore. And so it's important, like, for me and you know, I guess my audience, for them to understand the importance of voting, of having a voice, of understanding who you're voting for, because those votes, those elections have consequences. And some of those are literally life-threatening consequences, as in this case. You know, finance, you know, you cannot build wealth without health. You just can't do it without good health. You can't build wealth without good health. And so it's important that we, you know, you and I have been talking about some of the preventive measures, some of the things that we should be doing just as human beings, because we're not taught in school that much about anatomy. We're not taught that much about healthcare as far as how to take care of our bodies. We got a little bit of biology. We get a little bit of this and that. But there are some things that we should be doing, like before we even see any signs or any symptoms of COVID or any other illness, the flu. What is it that you think that we should be doing? Is just regular, like you said, being cautious, being mindful, being good citizens, and being healthy. That we're not doing as a habit to be more prepared for these type of situations, because this is certainly not going to be the last. It wasn't the first pandemic. It will not be the last.
That is actually correct. But the basic stuff is always applicable. Any kind of flu, any kind of contagion like this, you just have to get enough sleep. I know I'm like a super hypocrite if I say sleep a lot, but I'm one of those things, you know, you try to get at least 6 to 7 hours of sleep if possible. And really with the gatherings, if you have them, we very much minimize anything because, you know, with me having the ability to actually have meaningful interaction with COVID. But if you do have family gatherings, take it seriously. As I mentioned, I do transplants. So even before COVID, part of my speech and my teaching points to our patients for the first 3 months after we did transplant is it's difficult to kind of get sick from a stranger. You get on a bus, you see somebody cough, and you're like, oh, let me just back away from them. Where are they touching? I don't want to touch that. I want to touch this. You know, you're trying to be careful. You're like, I don't want to touch where they touch. If they're coughing, you're giving that side eye like, why don't you cover your mouth? Why aren't you doing this? you know, but when you have your kid running up on you and she's, you know, full of snot, you're like, oh, my daughter, I love you. That your gross is not gross. It's okay to rub your snot all over my neck because your gross is not gross. So it's really easy to get sick from your own family members. And that's why the gatherings, even small ones, were what Fauci was cautioning against, because it's too easy to feel like your family member, the ones you love, are not sick. And I think one of my, you know, friends who ended up getting sick, like, oh, we knew them. I'm like, it's not like, I don't know, what disease you, like, what disease? No. Oh, we knew them, so we're safe. What does that mean? Like, it's not like a drug habit. Like,
that's the litmus test, right? Yeah. I've known you for more than 5 years, so you must be safe.
It's a virus. You don't know if you have it. You can be asymptomatic, meaning you can have no symptoms and still infect people and be totally fine yourself. It's not like there's a secret handshake of the virus. It's like, I know him, so I'm not going to infect him. I'm only going to infect those strangers, not your family, mama. Don't you worry about it. So that's who you have to be more careful across. You know, even when I was watching my family members, they're like in a big group, and then they want to say something, they pull their mask down and shout. I'm like, exactly. No.
Right. That's a no-no. That defeats the purpose of wearing the mask.
Exactly. Now you're just like spraying those droplets out. Just reach out. But the basic tenets are the same. If you wanted to eat with somebody, then you can't talk, because that's what's going to have a lot of droplets. If you want to hang out, you hang out, but you keep a mask on and don't eat. But if you have a very small, tight-knit group that all of you are ascribing to the same kind of things, then it might be safe. There's obviously a certain amount of risk that we take in life every day. Every time we get into our car, every time we don't put our seatbelt on immediately. It's just how much risk are you willing to undertake for the safety of you and your family members? I think that's kind of why one of the podcast was like somebody who was very right wing. It was like, well, all these guys that are like, I'm going to strap up and defend my community with my gun, but I'm not going to wear a 2-inch piece of mask to defend my community. That is asking too much. So.
Right. I'll take a bullet, but I won't wear a mask.
Exactly. You're like, that doesn't make sense. It's not internally consistent with your messaging, but you try not to judge. You try to just take care of people as they come. But it's really hard because the people who even know a little bit, and that's what I talked to you about, that the people who are in medicine, unless they're super specialists in virology or, you know, pharmacology, we're not that comfortable talking about it in public and be like, no, this is the right thing and the only thing to do. But the people who don't know things are often have no problem talking about, you know, definitively saying what is and what is not. If you see experts, they're always going to hedge. There are safe things, there are not safe things, there are some good parts, there are some bad parts, and we don't know everything. We know very little. But what we know, we try to share as much as we can.
Right, and that's important. For one, that we don't know what we don't know, right? This is science, not an exact science. There's research, there's experiments, there's tests, there's regulations, there's as much safety and protocol put in place. But at the same time, this is something new. And we have to treat it like something new and respect it like something new, and also understand that the vaccine is something new. The treatment for it is something new. And this is a very toxic situation that we find ourselves in when you're starting to mix politics and that type of influence into health and safety. And so it's very important that we understand how easily these things can be transmitted and what we can do to prevent it, to be more safe, more cautious, to stay more in line with the guidelines, even though some of them feel like they may be infringing upon some of our freedoms. How free is free, right? That's a whole nother question and conversation. But at the same time, you know, you have to really think about protecting your community, protecting your family. And what does that mean, right? Does it always mean grabbing a firearm or being using some type of physical force to protect them? Sometimes it's just is protection is thinking smart and being safe and protecting them from outside elements like a virus, right? You close your door when it's cold to keep the cold out. Right. But you won't put a mask on to protect your family from being sick. So let's think about, you know, the decisions that we make and the rationale behind those decisions. And I know a lot of people are are waiting for the virus. Are waiting for the vaccine because they think that's the cure to the virus. And a lot of people are skeptical of the virus and skeptical of the vaccine. So they don't believe in either one, right? Which is a really kind of interesting place to be. But I get some text messages. I get some people who send me information as it's circulated around on the internet. And they talk about their concerns about the vaccine, whether or not it will be something that's mandated, whether it be something that right now, if you don't take, you may lose your job. We don't know the long-term effects of it. And so, therefore, it may have some type of long-term effect that transforms or mutates our DNA to that extreme. There are different extremes as far as positions on these things. But, I was listening to a conversation, and I don't regularly follow TD Jakes, but I was in a virtual town hall dining room setting, and he was asked whether or not he would take the vaccine. And the point that he made that was very, profound to me is that he mentioned that the presidents, not just the current president, but all the presidents, vice presidents, Congress, governors, doctors like yourself, nurses, people who are on the front line, people, our government and our healthcare system kind of rely on. The point that he was making is if the CIA and the FBI and the Secret Service was comfortable with those individuals taking it, and if it was something that would have a adverse effect on the people it was administered to, the healthcare workers would basically, if we killed them, we would kill us all, right? Because who's going to take care of the sick if we kill off all the doctors and nurses? So from his standpoint, it was the lesser of two evils, right? He didn't know what the long-term effects was. And maybe because of his age, he was thinking, well, hell, if it happens in the next, doesn't happen for another 10 or 20 years, I'll probably, be on a better place anyway. And so it won't really affect me. But if you're a little bit younger, you have some reservations, some misinformation. So let's just run down a couple of things. Like I said, there are some things that people are concerned about. Some things I'm not really familiar with, but been posed with the question, like, okay, so for example, are they going to make you take the vaccine? As far as you've been, the information that you've been given so far, is there any signs that you're going to be, there's a mandate or a regulation requiring people to take the vaccine as of now?
So as you know, at this point, the vaccine is not widely available. And the authorization for the vaccine is under emergency use. So while something is under emergency use authorization, it cannot be mandated. And that's why it's not one of those things that you can just go to your local CVS. Even we got an email like, please do not try to order the vaccine. You will not be able to do so. We have a sequence of events that way it's supposed to be happening. But nothing that we do in medicine can be mandated. Whether or not, and right now, as of right now, there is no discussion about this. However, would your employer make you do it? That we don't know. Right now, let's say in the hospital, you are supposed to get your flu shot, but you say, hey, I can't take my flu shot. They make exceptions depending on the hospital that you're at. We have no idea how people are going to use it, but as long as it's under emergency authorization use, there's not enough vaccine. They're not mandating it currently for even people who are working in the ICUs. They just are like, can somebody come take the vaccine? Is kind of anybody want more vaccine? We have more vaccine. And then we run over and find other people that are still qualified to get the vaccine. So from a government mandate standpoint, there is no real mechanism to mandate something like this. The only way we have had done, in the U.S., vaccines have been kind of given is through schools. Will the schools say, hey, your child has to get vaccinated before coming? That is not easy to know. We don't know at this point where that would go. But that was a point, you and I talked about the who is getting it tells you whether or not you think it's, safe or not. Because you and I have had multiple conversations about experimentation, et cetera, selective experimentation. Tuskegee is only one of the people things that people refer to that people know about. But if you buy a book called Medical Apartheid, you will go look at experiments that are going all the way to 1992, which is not that that's in our lifetime. That's like one throw of half a generation away. But you, it really depends on who you're recruiting, right? Those experiments went selectively to some areas where nobody really knows. Here, sign this, do this, you know, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, the people who are getting it are the people like that are the physicians. They're the ones that, you know, in the back, people are trying to figure out hey, is there any way you can get? No, sir. You're going to have to go through the regular way. I'm not going to do a back channel deal to get you a vaccine. So the people who are affluent, who have connections, are trying to get the vaccine. And the people that get left behind, and that's kind of what it's like so ironic about this whole situation, because of the medical distrust that has been established for so long against disenfranchised people, black, poor people, the people who need it have the least amount of confidence. So now that they're like, oh, we offered it, they just didn't want it, it's not our fault. I'm like, yeah, but you didn't do selective education to rebuild the trust that has been eroding for the last 100 years. And it's not even that recent. I mean, the book that I told you about, Organ Thieves. I mean, this is within our generation, within our lifetime, that people know about the problems that have happened that broke the trust between the medical profession and black communities. So if you really want to make sure that people that have been disenfranchised get it, you have to go and actually do the work. You have to rebuild the trust. It is going to be challenging. It's not going to be something we can fix in a day. But as far as vaccine hesitancy, that has been a problem in the U.S. that's been going on for the last decade. And when I lived in Portland, Oregon for like, they're like, oh, the vaccines have X, Y, and Z. I'm like, yeah, no. And along that time when I was, when people didn't want to get a tetanus shot, tetanus vaccine, I was like, well, all it'll take really, I hope not, but a big giant infection. And then people are going to be like, oh, you know what? Vaccines are good. Let's do vaccines. But to my shock, when this happened, when hundreds of people died, thousands of people died, people who know other people who've gotten the virus, who have died, who know family members, and healthy people, I mean, healthier people that we are like, they had no comorbidities, have died. In the face of the evidence, we still say, well, vaccines, is that a good idea? And that's it's a little interesting, because that's how much we've disconnected the experts in the field from the actual knowledge that is spreading across the country. But if you go like my Facebook page, we have a black female surgeon. I mean, everybody's like, look at my shot. Because the long-term effects we'll not know, but we do know the medium-term effects of the COVID. It's always a risk-benefit calculation. Always a risk-benefit calculation. When you see a ball player that was fitter than I or you are, now not able to throw a pitch because of, their heart is too bad from cardiomyopathy, that's a long-term problem that they're not going to be able to get over easily. And that will spiral into a lot of other problems. So when the super healthy like that get sick and they survived, but have long-term problems, the long-term problems you have to compare to what is the other thing. People had objections against, the chicken pox. They're like, oh, big deal. No big deal. Chicken pox. I get little bumps. My kid gets little bumps. We get better. It's not till you're old and 65 and then you have a whole swath of skin that's like on fire. You're like, that vaccine might not be a bad idea anymore. But with COVID vaccine, yes, we won't know the long term. But the more interesting point to me is how long will immunity last? That part of the question is pretty interesting. But we don't even know how long immunity lasts when you get it for real. And time will tell. But you brought up a good point about testing. And I did want to come back to that because not all testing is even. 192, I believe, tests were approved for testing. Each test has a different threshold for positive and negative. I bring this up because it's kind of like a pregnancy test. It's one of those stereotypes that you use, like, what? You're either pregnant or not pregnant. It's not kind of pregnant. But in reality, even that your basic pregnancy test, it's on a scale. So as your little tiny embryo is getting bigger and bigger, you're making more and more and more and more of that hormone. We just cut a piece of timeline. We're like, okay, when you hit this threshold, that's when the test is positive. So each test has a different positive level. That's why you pee on your stick. You're like, oh, it's positive. Let me get a real test. And you go in the hospital and you get a second test. And that can tell you how much hormone is it 20? Is it 200? Is it, oh, yeah, I'm really pregnant. well, I'm not pregnant. So there's no test that we have that's actually yes or no. So the confusion with the, oh, my test was negative, then it was positive, then it was negative, then it was positive, is something that we struggle with all the time too, because we can use a different test. With one test can pick up a lower amount of virus, like 50,000 copies. Another one, you have to have at least 250,000 copies. So yeah, if you keep taking those back to back, depends on how much virus you have in your blood at the moment. But time will tell how long the immunity will last, both from actually getting the COVID and surviving, and from getting the vaccine and surviving. So that part is unknown. Will it be that you have to take this every year? Don't know yet. Will you have to take it every 2 years? Don't know yet. But that's going to be the part that is the unknown. But am I afraid of the long-term side effects? Not really, because I see what the long-term side effects of getting coronavirus is. And being facetious, I'm like, even the small thing of not being able to taste for 6 months, I love coffee. I live for it. I love food. Not being able to taste for 6 months is still too long to not taste. Give me the shots. And yes, full disclosure, I have asthma. But yes, I'm like, asthma or not tasting coffee for 6 months? Coffee.
We all have our vices, so I won't judge. But you hit on some very, very good points, though, right? You know, this is a conversation that the medical community and people of communities of color should be having, because there is a history that we have mm-hmm. not healed from. There is a trauma that has taken place that we have not healed from, and so. These things are not conspiracy theories. These, you named a book. Most people are familiar with the Tuskegee experiments, right? We know about what happened. We know those things are facts. And so the fact that there is a new drug on the market now that, is being connected with Bill Gates and, wanting to wipe out black people or, whatever the case may be, some of these conspiracy theories that are out, that's only intensifying. Hundreds or 200 years, maybe even longer, history of distrust. And then even now, when we talk about how the difference between, you mentioned pregnancies, but black female patients who are pregnant and how differently they are treated than the white female patients, the amount of pain medicine that they receive. Same thing sometimes with black men or anyone who goes into a community hospital. They may not get the same consideration and same treatment as their white counterpart. So those things also perpetuate that distrust, perpetuate those fears of taking something that's good for you or could be potentially beneficial for you, at least worse, less of a damage to you physically and health-wise long-term than not taking it. And you also made another good point, like, it's not like they're looking for you and trying to get you, hey, can we get you to take this virus? I mean, take this vaccine for this virus. You know, we're looking for people to sign up. This is not the same type of deal. This is big pharmaceutical companies that are developing and distributing these drugs. And it's the FDA, the government is obviously regulating it. But it's not government-ran experiments. This is not the CDC that's putting these drugs out. They're just kind of doing a checks and balance oversight to make sure that the drugs that go out aren't killing you or wiping you out or mutating your DNA, because that would be a hell of a lawsuit for Moderna or Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer to have to pay. And they're for-profit companies. They're capitalists. I think they like pleasing their board members. I think they like pleasing their shareholders. And the bottom line is usually what's important. And I think like a lawsuit like that might not be in their favor. I mean, I think a lot of heads would literally roll if that happened.
I mean, that's an excellent point, because it's now a competition for the vaccine. Let's say one of these people did not do a good job. The other one's going to be trying to take up their market share. So from a business standpoint, they need to do a good job. They need to get, the best kind of thing out there. That's why Moderna was taking a little bit longer, because they were like, well, nope, we had all this. We want to make sure, because they don't want to lose a chunk of things, because everybody else is right behind them trying to take that, at this point, fame for, help saving the world, so to speak. So yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of interesting. It is in their best interest to put a product out that is functioning and as good as we can get it. But it's not a joke. I mean, recently, I don't know if you saw the news about the female physician who was in the hospital talking about her different treatment. The different treatment is not a thing of the past. It doesn't happen just in community hospitals. It happens all the time when we don't really realize it, between our implicit biases and institutional racism. And that you can't call it a colorblind project when you're like, oh, we offer the vaccine. It's not really colorblind, because you're not acknowledging the color that's there. If you're trying to get people to be comfortable with something, you have to approach them in a way that makes us feel like you're really acting in our best interest and not in the interest of something else. So it's a tricky world. But as far as modifying your DNA, like I will say, we're not that good, okay? We are not that good yet. We wish we were that good. And that is only just even talking about, you know, curing cancer. There's certain kind of cancers. If you could modify the DNA, boom, you'd be rich, son. Like, we wish we were that good. I don't do those kind of experiments anymore. But, you know, when, as a previous old scientist, when you had to do all those pipetting, you're like, still not working. We are not that good yet. It would be great. It would be like, oh, well, and you don't have to have kidney disease. I've just modified your DNA with a little shot. But it's not possible, because it would be great.
Yeah, I'm looking for that shot too, right? You can modify your DNA, cure any disease. That would be awesome. When that comes out, please let me know. I want to be first in line for that, or at least at the front of the line, you know.
Take away my asthma, just modify that. Boom. I'm there. But no, we're not even close to being that good, even for things that they've been trying to do that for a very long time. If you could modify DNA in something, we're still at the phase where we would have to be in like a group of cells in a dish, not a full walking person. It's not that easy to modify. But both of these vaccines are mRNA vaccines, meaning that they are in the pathway of just making proteins. So they just make proteins. They make your body make the proteins that are similar to the vaccine, the virus proteins. And so your body is like, oh, this protein's around. Did I get the virus? I'm not sure what's happening. And then your body is like, oh, but I still don't like it. Like, get rid of it. And then you rev up your immune system and you start attacking it. And that's why some of the side effects, the most common side effects, is kind of that fatigue, kind of like you got the flu, because that's part of, you know, getting sick. It's like, hey, you're kind of tired because your immune system's like using so many calories to kind of build up and fight against that intruder. So the most common side effects of the vaccine are headache and fatigue. I had one single amazing lymph node right by my clavicle here, which I forgot about the shot. So I was talking to somebody. I'm like, hey, why do I have this lymph node? I don't feel sick. I got this lymph node. I'm like, wait, didn't you get your shot there? I'm like, thank you. You're a genius. That is exactly why I have this one single lymph node here. But for me and most people, the majority of that side effect is that sore arm. And I facetiously say that, you know, how can working out be good for you? It hurts your body. I feel pain afterwards if I do it right. And that's how my arm felt. Like, I decided to do one arm, you know, curls or something. That's how my arm was. But that same day that I got my shot, I did a surgery. It was up most of the night. The only thing that was a problem was this. It made me feel motivated, though. I'm like, you know, this feeling is supposed to be, I'm supposed to be having this 3 times a day. I got to start working out again. But that was the majority of my experience. Right. Now, after the second shot, because I had the Moderna, after the second shot, some people have had a little bit more of that kind of fatigue, a little bit more. If they had it, none of it the first time, they've had it a little bit the second time. Because now your body already knows and recognizes this, that there's proteins in there. The mRNA makes the proteins, and now it's like a more robust immune attack to it. So some people got more tired on the second one, but that's the majority of the side effects. I do I saw that video of the girl who like passed out instantly. And this is talking about misinformation, which is the part that is the dangerous part. The nurse, she gets a shot and she immediately passed out. And then there's like headlines, nurse passes out after COVID shot. She's like, well, I pass out every time. That's a vagal response. I used to have that when I was younger. You poke me with a needle, I'd be hyperventilating because I hated needles. Irony, now I work with a needle day in and day out. But that is, I mean, even though that patient actually stated, like, wait, no, I always have that reaction. They're like, oh, this piece of news I can use and propagate for my own reasons. What their reasons are make no sense to me. However, it goes out that somebody passed out. that's not how allergies work. Like a true allergy, some people can have true allergies, and that's what, like with anything you would have. But a true allergy was, you know, a rash. I knew somebody who got like a tiny rash, but it was 3 days later. But we still attribute it to that because that's how we count things. A rash, shortness of breath, chest constriction, things like that. You can be allergic to any component of anything, but there's not that much stuff in this one, which is kind of nice. So will some people have allergy reactions? Probably. But for the most of us, breathing without a tube in my mouth is much more... I take that risk any day rather than, you know, even needing to take some Benadryl for an allergy or a rash or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like you said, it's a bit tricky, right, to navigate a lot of the misinformation that's put out there, to overcome some of those previous notions of mistrust and distrust that you have for government, for you have for the medical community, for you have for pharmaceutical companies. And so it's not easy to take this in the same vein of seriousness when you have so much going on around mm-hmm. you, so much noise, and it's hard to really focus in and zero in. Oh, okay, well, if this person's saying this and this person's saying that, I might as well just take my chances. I might as well just do what I've always done. If it was my time to go, it's my time to go. It's very easy to become very cynical and very jaded with society and with the world. But if you have kids, if you have family members, if you have friends that you care about, and you have to leave the house and you have to interact with others, please wear your mask. Keep your social distancing. This is not over. It's not getting better. The numbers aren't receding. They're increasing. There are more deaths today than there were last year this time. We're a year into this. I mean, some people, you know, forget that, you know, we've been dealing with this for a year and it's not going away this year. Many of us still won't receive vaccinations in 2021. And so while we're worried about what's in the medicine, there may be a new strand out by then that the vaccine will have to be updated to be able to treat and handle. So what we have to remember is that our health is paramount. Understanding the importance of our health is paramount. We have to prioritize how we as a community come together and share information, how we start to build these relationships with the medical community, with people that we can trust, voices that we can rely on. And we need more people of color in medicine so that we can build these relationships. I commend every nurse and, you know, RN and everyone out there on the front line, but we need more doctors, especially women of color, to be a part of this movement of healthcare for people of color, communities of color. I mean, I can't say it any other way. We need more representation. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to have people that look like us that we can talk to about these matters. So if you know somebody who's pre-med, please encourage them, sponsor them, do whatever you can to support their efforts and their pathway towards being a doctor, because we need those voices. We need people like Dr. Latifa Silski to be able to have these conversations with. To be able to have people that are knowledgeable, informed, that can come out and give it to us in a way that is facts. Like I said, there's, you know, a lot that we don't know, and I not once ever heard her speak to anything about she's not an expert in. But there is some information that doctors will receive. That we don't get. There is some information that doctors will be able to process and break down in a way that we are not able to regularly understand. So I truly appreciate you coming on and sharing everything you know, sharing your experience with COVID and with the vaccine, hopefully instilling some confidence in the audience that's listening about how, when it is an opportunity for them to take the vaccine, they will be able to make a more informed decision because, you know, rich, affluential people who are clamoring for the vaccine, they're not doing it because they're trying to commit suicide. They're trying to live as long as they can with their DNA intact as the way that they were injected prior to. So, I'm just saying, we're not there yet. You know, we're not at a point where we can alter DNA. I wish we could. It would be a different world, but we're just not there yet. So please do your research, get a second opinion, get a third opinion. If it doesn't sound quite right, it may not be right. But we do need to continue these conversations. We do need to be able to build those relationships with the medical community again. We do need to have more people responsible about this virus, about this pandemic, and about the ripple effect that it has on the healthcare workers and our family and our friends. So once again, thank you for coming on. I hope and pray that you stay safe as you continue to do your good work. Let me know how your second shot goes. And if there's any other news that you hear and you'd like to share with us, please, you're welcome to come back on the show anytime, even if it's just for a quick stop and pop. Where you're just phoning in and saying, hey, just wanted to chime in and let you guys know what's going on. We'd love to have you. We're all about getting our people back in the black, whether it's through culture, whether it's through health, whether it's through education or wealth. We need all of those things. So thank you for being a part of the conversation.
Thank you for inviting me. It's quite an honor. You're doing amazing work, and I hope you continue to flourish. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, everyone, that's my show. Thanks again for tuning in. Please continue to like, share, follow, support. I appreciate all the love. I appreciate everyone who has followed. We got to get this message out. Please share it with your friends. We're everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LJDnetwork.com, BlackTalkNetwork.com, BackInTheBLK.com, and now newly launched EmpoweredStudios.com. Check us out on all platforms. The LG Diamond Awards 2021 is coming up. Big shout out to Lena Jones, who's doing her thing out in Chesapeake. One love. Not to mention all my people that have been supporting the SEED Initiative, Social Education for Economic Development, one of our sponsors here. Thank you all. We appreciate everything. Tune in with us next Saturday, 10 o'clock a.m. on LJD Network Radio. You got to check us out. LJD Network Radio. LJDN Radio is where it's at. 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday mornings. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Stay masked up. See you next time.